This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hi, I'm James Wyatt, one of the lead designers for 4th edition and author of Eberron Trilogy, The Draconic Prophecies, and you're listening to The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome, a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your solo Tome host, Jeff Greiner. And in this episode, we're going to load up on some magic items, wear some spiked armor, and hire a few more henchmen to do all the work for us in reviewing Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium.
Hells yeah.
And yes.
Right, baby.
For the record, I have abandoned my usual co-host Tracy in this episode. She had to go off and gallivant around Seattle and
dropped that like a bad habit.
That's right. But instead, I've called on the greatest team of contributors in the Podosphere, the cast of the DM Roundtable, or at least 50% of them, the good 50%. So I introduce to you the mouth, both for talking and drinking, of the DMR, Thaddeus. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, good to be here.
And making his debut appearance on the show, the man, the legend, the coolest gamer in Kansas, it's Randall.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
And Thaddeus, you've been on before with me, I think, once, right?
That is correct.
Because that was a whole thing where I didn't have you on, but I had all of your co-hosts on for a while.
Yeah, I was hoping that we'd get to stick it to Randall for a little while longer, but, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, after hanging out with Randall at Gen Con, I just sort of assumed that he and I had talked and done stuff together, and maybe from listening to the DMR and all that stuff, I just sort of felt like I'd been on with him before. I hadn't.
Well, yeah, you'd been on the DMR with him before.
I suppose. Yeah, you've been on the show.
But you've been on our show. Just never had him on yours.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that I had never had him on. So here he is.
Hey.
Yeah, this is actually.
I'm happy to be here.
This is actually really close to the one-year anniversary of when I came on your show last, because we did the Halloween episode.
Oh, yeah, it was a Halloween episode. So, well, mm-hmm. so we try to have Thaddeus on about once a year, it seems.
That's right. That's all that's safe, really.
That's about all that you need, really.
I understand that. Yeah. I don't know how you guys put up with him, once a week?
Well, you know, it's when he shows up, so, you know.
The alcohol helps.
I still continue to threaten to use whatever contacts I have and try to get, like, a star-studded pirate DMR episode. You know, it'll be me and Tracy and Ed Greenwood and Bob Salvatore, and, you know,
if it's gonna be pirate, you can't have Tracy there though.
Well, somebody has to post it. So I figured
Tracy, you can get Sam to do it.
Tracy was gonna
same
be
with Sam,
I suppose. Tracy was gonna be my inside person. She agreed to do it back in the day, but we'll see. Anyway, we should stop the banter and get on to some news, because I suspect there might be some things to talk about there before we get into the actual review.
Because
it turns out I have a lengthy list of news. It's been a long time, I think, since we've talked about news, because we've been doing book club episodes and we don't do news there, and we've been doing other sort of special things, and it's just been a long time since we've had a regular review episode of the show. So we haven't talked news in a while. So first up, Monty Cook is designing 5th edition D&D. Go.
Yeah, whatever.
No, he's not.
Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But you know what? It's not going to change what I'm doing right now. So, I'm not going to weigh in on this one. This is what I'm tired of. We've been hearing about 5e for the last 3 years. So,
How about this, Thaddeus?
I'll see it when I believe it.
How about this, Thaddeus? Can you tell us where that news comes from? What do we know?
What I've heard is that Monty Cook announced it himself on Facebook, and some guys from Wizards of the Coast announced it, and then I think there was some kind of big hullabaloo with what's her old what's her face?
Margaret Weiss.
Margaret Weiss on her forums, you know, went and you know, was just all like, oh, we all know he's doing it, blah 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 blah. So everybody's got their panties all up in a bunch now.
Okay, well let's go back to the beginning. First,
okay.
Wizards of the Coast hired Monty Cook.
Well, right, and then he wrote 3.0, and then they fired him, and then they hired him back.
Right.
Like, is that the beginning you wanted to go to, or
well, I was
too
go,
far?
I was going
to
go quite far, that far back. Yeah, Monty Cook is the game designer who largely wrote 3rd edition D&D, then left shortly before 4th edition work began.
He was a very verbal opponent of 4th edition.
Right, yes. And although, I mean, I talked to him a few times talking about, at one point I wanted to try to get some of the old 3rd edition designers on to give their opinion about 4th edition, and he said he would be willing to come on and talk about anything but that, you know, but he didn't seem like negative about it. He just sort of said, you know what, I don't want to stick my nose in other people's business. So, you know, and I thought that was fair, so I didn't push it. But he's now working for Wizards of the Coast again. They brought him back, and a lot of people have said, well, why would he be coming back for an edition of the game that he's not a fan of, unless he was coming back to, quote, fix it, which means a new edition?
No. See, no. See, and I'll tell you why. The reason why is because when you have a company like that, you've got only so many players out in the field that are writing good stuff. And they knew he was out there. You know, he's done some other things. And they wanted to get somebody back, I think, that had a historical perspective and say, look, you've done some pretty good stuff. We really just need your talent. I think that they'll be improving the game. You know, I think they'll be – and maybe for those exact reasons. Maybe say, look, you may be opposed to a lot of the things that are going on in 4th edition. We want that. We want you to test – we want you to be our acid test against what we're putting out there. You can help us do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that will literally, you know, like a blacksmith, it'll hone a better game because of it. I don't think he's rewriting a new edition or anything like that. I think it's literally simply about it's like, look, Monty, you're one of the best guys in the business. You know, you practically built 3E all by yourself, although you had lots of help. But, I mean, still, and you've got the skills, and we, you know, that's an acid test. So, you know, I think that's... You know, that's my old man opinion. So.
Sure, and rather than, I mean, I don't care to personally speculate or whatever, but I think what we are seeing is that this is sort of the first we've seen some small moves and changes in the company since Mike Morris has taken over, and I think this is the first, you know, big move. Right, we're going to make some major staffing changes and try to bring back some of the things that made people love D&D in previous editions, and I don't think that's all bad. I don't know if it's a new edition. I don't know if it's an evolution. I don't know if it's just going forward with what we have now, but making sure everything is awesome from here on out. I don't know what it is, that's sort of my impression, is that his friends said we want him to come back because he makes good stuff, and we want him to be making D&D. So
right, and you know, I stand on the ideal that you don't have to have a brand new edition to fix what you perceive is wrong with the game.
Sure.
So.
I mean, I think you could argue. Exactly. I think you could argue that second edition was not really that new compared to first edition, right? I mean, it was an evolution of the game, not a complete revamp of the game.
I would agree with that. Yes,
and I think you could continue to do that, and I would be okay with that. I would be okay with an evolution of the game that doesn't, you know, invalidate everything I own, rather than a revamp of the game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we move on?
Oh yeah.
The Drizzt comic is out. Anybody read comics but me?
Not a big comic reader.
So. I do, but I just recently started school again, and so I am limited in my reading time right now.
Yeah, I've gone all digital recently, so I have to wait, you know, several weeks to a month for them to come out in digital format. But they are available. IDW has an app where I can buy them and read them on my iPad for $2 a piece.
Nice.
And the Drizzt comic is decent. You know, we're doing our current book club book is Neverwinter, the new R.A. Salvatore book. We'll be chatting with Bob Salvatore, R.A. Salvatore, about that on the 24th of October, if anybody wants to join in on our live broadcast of that at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. So that's going to be going on. But anyway, yeah, so it's out, and I've read the first couple of issues now. They're decent, although not super story-packed. You know, I read the first two issues, and I don't know that I felt like I read two issues worth of story. But the illustrations are fantastic in a way that that the novels don't always do. You know, it's hard to picture some things that are completely foreign and alien and fantastic. And so having these visuals, I think, helps with that. So,
who does the artwork for it?
I don't know. I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay. I was just curious.
I'd have to look it up. But anyway, it's out. It's decent. I'd pay $2 for it and do.
Cool.
So, other news. This week is one of our first theme weeks for DDI. Or, I'm sorry, 3 months. They're doing their Oriental Adventures Carateur sort of month this month.
That's yeah. Right.
Randall, did you write any of those?
Sadly, no. Nope. But there's some good people that have, and there'll be some fantastic articles coming out.
Right on. I'm actually looking forward to some of those. I think they said they were going to do something with, back at Gen Con, they said one of the articles was going to deal with using kanji and things, which is the writing.
For like the rune priest, I think, is what they were talking about.
Which is that concept with the rune priest. There's a lot of things with the rune priest that I think thematically I've wanted to do with a character for a long time, and the more support I could have so that I could eventually actually do that and build the character that exists in my head would be awesome. So we'll see.
Yeah. Those should be good articles. And it's a nice alternative, I think, to having to put out an entire book, because I think there's enough material out there that, you know, a few themed articles on certain character classes and stuff like that, and you can build an Oriental Adventures campaign, you know. So,
and I think if they were smart, and I don't know if this is their plan or not as they do more of these theme months, is it wouldn't be difficult to then, if they ever get their PDF thing going on, you know, selling digital copies of books, I think it wouldn't be hard to do a compilation book. You know, hey, for $3 or $4 or $5 or whatever, buy the Oriental Adventures module, which is a collection of all these DDI articles. So you don't have to have a subscription, you can get them that way.
Instead of doing that Dungeon and Dragon annuals, the books that they were putting out, they could just do PDFs at a much, much smaller cost. Mm-hmm. And then that would give people who maybe no longer have access to DDI still a little bit of access to the content and Wizards some funds. So
yeah, I think that'd be... I'm a brilliant
guy.
That's
a good idea, man.
They should hire me.
Write them an email, man.
Well, and we know they've got some things in the works for digital sales because they accidentally spilled some beans on that at Gen Con. But we just haven't seen what that is yet, and they haven't been ready to announce anything. Seldom do they tell me about their future plans because I guess I'm like press or whatever. So,
yeah, who are you going to tell? Really, come on.
Just the whole
you can
internet.
Tell with the hat with a little sticker on the side of it that said press on it.
Yeah. In other news and related news, if you want to be one of the people publishing articles on Dungeon and Dragon or otherwise, the open submission window is going on right now.
Yes, it is.
And that's what, through the end of November?
Yes.
Yes. So end of November?
I think.
Really?
That's what somebody told me on Twitter.
October 1st to November 30th, yeah.
I'm going to believe whatever Twitter tells me, I'll believe it.
All right.
So you've got some time till the end of November to get your submissions in. I know I've got a big, long list of them that I have not had time to flesh out and turn into anything useful at all. So hopefully I run into some free time sometime before the end of November and I could send those in.
Well, it's a process, that's for sure. So.
Sure. And ironically, once November's over, that's when the big project that I'm doing right now that's taking up all my time is over, so I can focus back on that. So
the nice thing about it is, go ahead.
I was just going to say what I'm really liking about this window is the post they put out on Dragons and Dungeon magazine is the
read my mind. Yep.
Yeah, the open window. Just how candid and just how very blunt they are about the process. Like, it's great. It gets everybody on the same page. Everybody has a guideline for what they should be writing for, and you know we know exactly where we sit in the pile. You know, they're going to get thousands on thousands, and they're only going to publish a few hundred. So if you don't, you know, if you don't get accepted, it's not because you suck. It's just because, man, you know, pulling out a hundred out of a few thousand submissions That's tough work.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it could also be that you suck.
Yeah,
but the point is that they'll at least tell you what's wrong. And the few people that I've heard on Twitter that have already gotten feedback on their articles have said that it's been really good feedback. So yeah. That's a great thing to hear. And I think one of the complaints I think going on early on in 4E was that there wasn't enough transparency in that whole process. And I think they've really, really improved that. And the article, in addition to the one-page submission guidelines, which are all, you know, the crunch, if you will, that one long article in, what was it, Dragon, right? That kind of spelled out, you know, these are the kind of things we're looking for. You know, this mm-hmm. kind of stuff, yeah, it's great, but, you know, we got so much of that, we don't want it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's the kind of stuff people need to read. And if you're out there looking to submit, seriously, guys, read that article because, you know, otherwise you get butthurt about something you don't need to be worried about. So just, yeah, read that article.
You don't want to take a bunch of time writing up a pitch for something that they've already outright and publicly said they don't want from you. That's just a waste. Right. That's a waste of everybody's time. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I know. And I know when they first started this process in the first window earlier in the year, I only sent in, I think, one pitch. But unlike all of the previous pitches, and I don't send in a ton. I've maybe sent in a dozen in my whole life, right? But for the first 11, it went out and it disappeared into the void. Never heard a thing back ever.
Right.
As soon as they started this new process. The first time I sent something, the only time I've sent something in, I got an email back from Chris Perkins, you know, with two paragraphs of feedback, which was fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was good.
That's gotta be time consuming for those guys too.
It does.
I mean, that's two paragraphs for every submission. That would be more than I think I wrote in my first college career. So yeah.
I think his feedback was longer than my pitch. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's the other nice thing is that, you know, they don't want a lot in the pitch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, a paragraph, you know, a good paragraph that describes really well what you're going to talk about. And, you know, and it's like the elevator pitch, if you will. Yeah.
Which is really hard because sometimes it's hard to summarize what is cool about my idea, you know, in a couple sentences, in any idea, you know. But you really want to focus on the cool. Anyway, this isn't an advice episode on how to pitch, but we wanted to let people know that was going on. Today we are talking about Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium, or Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium. Those are the two pronunciations I will accept. Anything else is out. So don't even try it. Including Morty. We don't say Morty.
I was about to ask. Oh.
Man. Oh,
and Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium is our new book of items and magic and all kinds of stuff. But before we get into that, I should mention our sponsor for the episode, Noble Knight Games. They're an online store. They're a brick-and-mortar store. They specialize in finding things that are out of print and difficult to find, or they're there to help you unload stuff that you don't want anymore. You know, when 5th edition comes out and you want to get rid of all your 4th edition stuff, they'll take it. So my pick of the episode for this episode is a book that came out at the same time as Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium, The Madness at Gardmore Abbey. Have either of you picked that up?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, picked that up last week.
You seem excited about that, Randall. What is it?
It is a... It's sort of like a maxi adventure, if you will. It's not just a module that you would pick up with a folder and a couple of maps. It's got four booklets, two on background of the area and stuff, and two on the actual encounters you go through. It's an adventure for levels 6 through 8, so you've got quite a bit of activity you can do. It comes with specialized counters for the monsters and NPCs, and also specialized counters for dungeon tiles, special dungeon tiles that you can add to the maps that are included. Mm-hmm. And the big deal, a copy of the Deck of Many Things.
An actual physical Deck of Many Things.
Deck of Many Things, and it is very cool. The art is fantastic.
With all new rules on how it works, and the whole story sort of focuses around it. The deck actually creates some interesting political intrigue and things going on.
Yeah, it works actually. You can use the deck on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one way. I mean, you can use it in a very overview sort of a way, you know, as kind of an item in the background. Or if the characters actually end up getting down and dirty with it, you know, it goes down to the individual effects of each card and things like that. So there, it's very detailed. I was impressed with how they handled it. So
I'm really looking forward to getting it. The product looks so good. I'm almost willing to forgive the poor packaging.
Oh, I hate those new boxes.
The boxes that are twice as big as they need to be. But
Yeah. And half as flimsy as, or twice as flimsy as they should be.
But the material inside is really good, and I'm really excited. I wish I wasn't going to have to wait like 2 years before I'd have a chance to run it, but that, I think that's what my schedule looks like.
See, I would call it something in between a super adventure and a campaign setting, because they give you a lot more information included in the box than what you need to just run through the adventure, so you can continue playing in that scenario for quite some time past the written adventure.
Yeah,
so
it's almost as much setting as it is adventure.
Right.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm thinking – I've been using it as a split use, and I'm thinking about stealing the background campaign info and then letting – if my wife decides to DM later this year, letting her use the adventure if she wants to use the adventure. So I'm kind of not reading the adventure real closely and sort of just – you know, I've looked sort of, oh, well, this is the adventure, but I've not really dug into it. Mm-hmm. So to avoid spoilers, but yeah, it's fantastic. Good product.
Awesome. Well, people can pick it up from Noble Knight with $8 off, so it's only $32 for that whole big box full of awesome. And people should check it out, noblenight.com.
So you could almost say that Noble Knight is like your own little Mordenkainen's Emporium, right?
It is totally my magnificent emporium.
That's right.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more, Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
Speaking of Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium, let's talk about it. That is the subject of tonight's the main thrust, if you will, of tonight's episode. Yeah.
I had the chapter open to weapons when you said that. That was pretty awesome.
Oh, well, that works. I was thinking of thrusting in a completely different way, and I think Thaddeus picked that up.
Yeah,
too.
I know you were.
Thaddeus,
it's a family show, damn it. It's a family show.
Very good. Giggity. So, tell me. Somebody tell me. Why is this not just Adventurer's Vault 3?
Thad, you want to take that first? You want me to?
Well, because Mordenkainen wrote it.
Oh, that means...
No. Well, Adventurer's Vault, honestly, one of the biggest, claims of the detractors from the Adventure Vault series made was that it's a very dry book that's just nothing but here's a bunch of weapons, here's a bunch of armor, use them in your game. And Mordenkainen's is more about how to include story, how to build... more roleplay value into your magical items instead of just, here's a bunch of stats so your characters can be really strong. So Mordenkainen seems like a book more geared towards dungeon masters, where the Adventurer's Vault seemed a lot more geared towards players.
Although I would argue that the Adventurer's Vault 2 was already moving in that direction. There was more of that stuff going on in the second installment. And so I think they were moving that direction anyway, and then this is just sort of where it evolved to.
Right. I would say it was definitely in transition, but that transition didn't really feel like it had... This feels like it has a lot more direction. Like, they finally got where they were going, and Adventurer's Vault 2, it really seemed like they hadn't picked a solid direction yet, so...
Well, all right, so give me some examples. How is it not just... What's in there that makes it not just a list of magic items to make your character awesome?
Well, ooh, okay, well, there is... Oh, Brandon,
sorry.
Go for it. No, I've been talking this whole time, so...
From my perspective, and I go all the way back to, first edition and before that, I open a random page and I see stuff that I remember from days of yore, if you will. I mean, I'm looking here and I'm seeing Broom of Flying. I'm seeing Bottled Smoke. I'm seeing a Chime of Opening. I'm seeing Darren's Instant Fortress. These are all things that if you crack open the first edition, AD&D Dungeon Master's Guide, you're going to see these items in their original state, and to bring them back like this and to still have a lot of their fluff, if you will, pretty close. Some of it's been altered, but pretty close to how they were meant to in the first place. And the rules have they've gone much more flexible on how they've put in the rules crunch for these. So there's a lot of flavor here. I mean, and that's and especially for someone that understands the historical perspective and knows where this stuff comes from, it's really cool to see these items finally in the game going, there they are. You know, it's like, finally, you know, and to attach to that. It's kind of a, you know, it's a nostalgia thing a little bit, but it's, I think that's important, at least for me anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for me, it's if you crack the Adventurer's Vault and then you crack Mordenkainen's and you put them side by side, what you're going to see in the Adventurer's Vault is just lists of stat blocks.
Yep.
And every once in a while, you'll see a little sidebar talking about one of the weapons on the page. And so you've just got pages and pages of stat blocks, and then one description, then stat block, one description. Then, you know, in Adventurer's Vault 2, you get the wondrous items and stuff like that that have a little more description. But when you crack Mordenkainen's open, every item has a paragraph plus of text.
Yep.
Most of them have as much or more text written as there is stat block. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely fewer, you know, items in this book, but there's way more, you know, what they call fluff. I hate that word, but, you know, it's the word that everybody knows.
I own it. Yeah. I own that word. I love fluff.
So it's like we're talking about candy bars, fluff and crunch. But there's just way more story element to it. They've written, you know, a much better, much deeper description of each of the items instead of just giving you 20 stat blocks and 5 descriptions. Mm-hmm. So,
see, in a lot of ways, here's my sort of take on it. This book feels like, and I don't want to be negative as I say this, but it feels like a big apology for the early days of 4th edition. You know, this is them saying, look, now we can give you all the stuff you are asking for on like month 6 of the edition. You know, we can all those magic items you always wanted to have, they're finally here. All the magic items that we put in there that weren't quite right, well, now we have the greater version or the true version, right? Which is doing the stuff that you wanted it to do, which they can do now because of the item rarity system. They can now do that and keep it balanced by saying, well, we can now have these things more powerful than normally they would be because they're rare. And so that's okay.
Right.
But I really feel like, I mean, all that story people complained they didn't get in the early days, that's in there. You know, it feels like all the things that they took all the feedback from things that the older players that were sort of drifting away or complaining about the edition or whatever, they gave them in this book is a big saying, look, we're taking a new direction and this is what we're doing now. And here's all that stuff you wanted. Come check it out.
Yeah. I don't know if I would go as far as say it was an apology, but I think it's certainly a lesson learned.
Uh-huh.
And I think that, you know, and I think these are the things that I think they always wanted to do this, but maybe they felt too constricted by the original rules, you know, as they were originally put down at 4th edition. And it's like, you know, all this exception-based design, et cetera, whatever. And then they finally figured out that, oh, well, you know, there are some things we can do with this. Mm-hmm. And then went forward. So,
yeah, it seems like
I can't help but think, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I was just going to agree. I think in the early days, they were very much set in this is the design philosophy of this edition. We're going to stick everything within that design philosophy, and we're not going to waver from that design philosophy, and everything's going to work out that way, and we can be creative and find fun and interesting things to do with it. And they did. But they also sort of drew a line and said, this is a new edition. We're going to focus on the new edition, and we're not going to look back to old editions on how to do things or to tell us what we have to do or what we can and can't do.
And you know, a lot of the designers, you know, they talked about playing older editions of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think books like this are the result of some of that work. I mean, everyone talks about, you know, writing new versions of the game or whatever, but I really think that, you know, if you're playing a first edition D&D and you come upon something like, you know, hey, I got a potion of cure moderate wounds, and you think, well, why don't we have that in 4th edition? Why don't we? You know, or come up something a little more important, you know, like cursed item, you know, like boots of uncontrollable dancing, you know. It's like, wow, my character got stuck with those. It's like, you know, you could do that in 4th edition. Why not? You know, I'm thinking of designers talking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the result of that kind of thing. And as we'll probably talk. Oh, go ahead.
You mentioned something that I wanted to point out as well is that they fixed potions. I found in 4th edition previous to this, people very seldom wanted to use potions because you had to burn healing surges to use everything. Like, every effect was use a healing surge and get this. Even healing potions weren't very useful because you had to, you know, you burnt a healing surge and then got less hit points than your surge value. Well, that's
right.
And I'm killing an action on it, you know? I'd almost rather just try to kill the thing faster. This changes some of that, where now most potions don't use a healing surge at all, the way it used to
right.
be. Well, of course, there didn't used to be healing surges, so I guess that's not a fair confession either, right? But then even the healing potions say, you know, it uses a healing surge unless you don't have any and you're bloodied. If you don't have any healing surges and you're bloodied, so if you're in a desperate situation, you're going to die, you can still use this healing potion and save yourself.
Yeah,
and then that's a good place to keep that, and that helps address the continuation of the 5-minute workday or adventuring day that even in 4th edition has not been completely solved.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you made me think of that when you mentioned cure moderate wounds potions, and I thought it was worth noting that's in there, and I look forward to seeing more of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a whole bunch more consumables in here, and they're cooler, I think. They're neater than some of the original stuff, so... I think people will want to use these.
You know, and I was going to say to your comment about this seeming like an apology, if this is what we get when Wizards of the Coast apologizes for, what the edition was earlier, then fine. I hope they stay sad for a while. I hope that they stay in the apology mode for a while. Yeah, because it seems like this apology stage, if that's what it is.
Well, and I think Randall's right. It may not be an apology or whatever, right? But it's certainly lessons learned, and that's sort of the point I was trying to get at.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm happy because this seems like one of their best publishing years to date. So fewer books, I know, but man, the quality has definitely gone up.
Yeah,
so.
I'm happy with a publishing schedule of fewer books with higher quality, and I think we're just starting to really see that, right? Because a lot of the things that we've been seeing so far this year, which have been good, have also been in development for long enough that policy wasn't in place, right? I think we're only now going to start seeing the books that are actually really affected by the fewer books at higher quality strategy.
Yeah.
Because we're, what, a year or so out now from that?
Yeah. Well, this was one of those books that got pulled off so it could get that treatment. So. Right.
Yep.
One of the things I did notice, and maybe it's just me, but I was thinking, because, you know, I'm doing this the book club on the book Neverwinter, and I've been reading the Driss comic, and I read the previous book in the trilogy before, and Gen Con had this big, you know, Neverwinter Drizzt sort of theme going on to it and all that kind of stuff, and the video game that may or may not ever come out, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's been a real push towards this Neverwinter thing and Drizzt stories and all that kind of stuff. It occurs to me that one of the things that Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium allows you to do is start making characters from Drizzt books. You know, all the magic items, items that 4th edition never did well are here. You know, the battle rager dwarves with the spiked armor. Well, guess what? There's a new kind of armor that's spiked, you know?
Yep.
Driss has a frost brand and a defensive weapon from back in the second edition days or first edition days, whenever they were written, right? Which 4th edition never really translated well. Now they're in there, translated well. You know, so a lot of the items and magic and things that they never quite that those stories never quite jived well with 4th edition suddenly work, and it's probably just them going back to older stuff, right, and trying to capture some of the flavor of older magic items and what have you, and you know, these are stories that were originally conceived in under those older stories or under older editions or whatever, and so it's probably a coincidence. I don't think they were necessarily saying let's make Drizzt possible. But it does occur to me, because I've sort of been in that mindset the last month or so.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of Drizzt fans out there that are really happy about that, huh?
we'll see. All right, so other than magic items and descriptions of magic items, what else do we have in the book? Because there's more things in here we haven't talked about yet.
Well, you mentioned that there's a new armor, and there's actually, there's four or five new armors in the book?
A handful of new armors, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it looks like actually six new armors and a new shield. So And what they did with armor was, with these new armors, is basically they went the same way as they had gone with weapons in the past, and they'd given, they gave these new weapon, or these new armors, sorry, I'm all flustered now. They gave all these new armors properties. So you can have, you know, a property that's durable, that actually reduces damage the first time you get hit in every combat. And then there's, what's the other one? Barbed, which means like the first time you get struck with a melee attack, that the attacker takes damage. And there's a spiked shield that has the same barbed properties. So now you have armor that will do more than just raise your AC in combat. So I think that helps with the, I think a lot of their design helps with giving people who are playing Essentials characters a few more options to do fun stuff in combat. So,
and they did the same thing with weapons as well. We have, I don't know if they're all new weapons or some of them are just errated or retconned weapons or whatever, because I mean clearly we've had some of these before. But you know, you have the new spike chain whips, the bastard sword and the falchion and the broadsword are back, you know.
The rapier,
the flail. You know, there's all kinds of you know, sort of classic D&D weapons that get a new look here. So,
yeah, and they put a lot of new stuff in a new category. Was it like superior weapon category or something? Mm-hmm. So,
yep, they got more superior weapons, and you also get a handful of new feats to go along with those specific new weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, go, man.
If you're,
I was just going to say, artifacts and curses, if you're talking about going past what there is for just magical items,
mm-hmm.
they give how to use cursed items and then a whole kind of slew of new cursed items that you can use in your game, as well as artifacts. So kind of the wondrous items that have, I don't know, like an intelligence attached to them. But they also have a lot of story feature attached to them as well. And the book really goes into detail about the fact that these artifacts are, and cursed items are, under the control of the DM. So the DM decides when they come into play, and the DM decides when they exit play. And so I think part of that book is really trying to, the authors are really trying to stress the fact that I think DMs have felt helpless when it comes to magic items in the past. And this book wants to empower the DM to say, no, you know, this, when they get their stuff, it's up to you. And when they lose their stuff, that's up to you as well. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I think that is, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and a lot of those new artifacts, are not new, right? It's continuing this sort of the throwback to previous editions and bringing in some artifacts we used to have. The cursed items are built brilliantly in that they're not really cursed items. They're cursed item properties that you attach onto other normal items. And they're all level neutral. So you can take any curse and apply it to any item, no matter what tier or what level you are.
Right, and so you can, in essence, make cursed items instead of just like, here's a cursed sword. You know, every cursed sword's going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. You want to say something, Randall?
Yeah, building on what Thaddeus said about putting magic items more in the DM's control, I think the chapter that really, really brings that to light is the whole chapter on story items. You might run a campaign that where you've got an item that's totally outside what the rules would recognize or need to have. And so the chapter on story items tells you how to go about designing something like that and what kinds of stories, the properties, and what kind of form something like that might take in your campaign. And it sort of harkens back to, there are a lot of DMs who would much rather focus on a classic sort of, if you will, a fairy tale type story or something like that. And these are the kind of items or the kind of way of doing magic items that fit really well with that kind of a campaign.
I was going to say, it's funny because most of these story items, you go through it and you go through how they work and designing them and all that kind of stuff, right? This is not new, right? None of this is new.
Story items
are not actual items. This is basically a whole section on telling DMs, look, it's okay to break the rules. It's okay to say this monster is invulnerable unless they're hit with this item. You can't kill the Rakshasa unless you use the blessed crossbow.
Doesn't that fall back in line with your Dritz kind of idea that it wasn't one of his original books? Like, he had to slay a demon or a dragon or something like that, and he had to use this specific sword that was
Yeah, he killed a demon with his Frostbrand sword because, you know, the demon's made of all fiery, right? And he's using an ice weapon.
Yeah.
And he just sort of stuck it in and just left it there and let him die.
Yeah, it's kind of the idea of you get a weapon and it's got a specific purpose and it has to be used for that purpose or, you know, you're going to be, you know, bashing your head against a brick wall.
And it's more than that. It's really just all of these – and some of these aren't even really items. I mean, true name. Is not an item,
yep.
You know. It's basically right. Just saying you have permission to say, forget the rules, people. You know, fine. We'll put it in here. Here's a rule that says the DM can break the rules. Done. It's over with. Now stop fighting with your players about it and yeah. let the DM tell a story.
Yep. The nice thing is it's done in a consistent way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it presents the story obstacle. And, you know, it's a way to not to necessarily – you don't necessarily want to apply these kinds of effects arbitrarily, but you can use them, like you were saying, to build in as part of the story. And it, almost all of these say a unique creature or a unique item or whatever. So these are special events in your campaign. You know, the average run-of-the-mill orc is not going to have a Ring of Mortal Delights probably. You know, you don't need that. But, you know that kind of thing is, you know, like I said, it's just built into the story, so mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
I'm just glad they made it official, so now the
right
the grognards can back off.
Yeah, so. can we move on to my favorite part of the book? And I know that sounds terrible when I say this is my favorite part of the book.
Are you going to say adventuring gear?
Yes, I love adventuring gear.
The whole chapter of items that aren't magical.
Yes.
Yes.
I was so excited. I ran around PAX and showed different people that I knew when I got this book, different people that I knew this chapter because I was so excited about it. I like the idea. There's a whole list of new things that can be treasure that you can give to your players. And here's a whole bunch of ways that they can use them. And it's almost like I can give items to my players that aren't magical more often. And then every once in a while throw in a magical item, and then that magical item feels a bit more special instead of, all right, you guys find a treasure and everybody gets a +1 sword or, you know, a +1 weapon for your class. Or instead it's just like you find a bunch of gold and then you find a bag of ball bearings and then you find a devotee's kit or something like that, or just, you know, a bunch of mundane items, and then let the players play with those for a while, and then every once in a while throw a magic item at them. I love that idea.
Well, see, and a lot of this is, like, in previous editions, we had all this stuff, right? We had pages and pages of charts of mundane equipment, and I used to, this is all player stuff. A lot of this is player stuff in my mind, right? Mm-hmm. I may not give out, you know, a chalk and slate as a reward or whatever as a DM, but I darn bet somebody's going to go out and buy one and carry it around. I know I would. I used to dig through all this stuff and buy all these little knickknacks because you never know when a piece of chalk might come in or
exactly.
That ball of twine or whatever, you know. And so I would go shopping and have all kinds of knickknacks and little things that fourth edition never, you know, in its idea, and this, again, this is going back to the original design philosophy of let's move away from the simulationist stuff and nitpicking and that kind of stuff on that kind of little things isn't the heroic fun or whatever. But I don't know. I enjoy some of that.
Some of that stuff's fun. Right. When I saw the chart for trade goods, you know, for how much is 100 pounds of silk worth? Or, you know, like I'm saying, you put in a bunch of stuff that's treasure that's not just like here's a pile of gold.
Yep, right?
Like, right. Exactly.
The dragons collect, you know, shiny and valuable objects that are far beyond. You know, they collect paintings. They collect. Textiles, they collect baubles, there's tons of stuff. And, you know, when the players want to have their own castle or a fort or whatever, it's just like, okay, it's like a money sink. It's like, okay, I want to get rid of a little of my players' money, so do you want a plain castle or do you want to decorate it? Because if you want to decorate it, these things are going to cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the I hate to say it, but like the massively multiplayer kind of approach. Like you put a bunch of shiny objects that really don't affect the game in front of the players, but it affects their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you let them play with it and they enjoy that.
But
I enjoy that.
But in fairness, that was around in D&D long before there were MMOs.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, yeah. You now we have. I can tell you that castle cost a $250,000 gold, but it's empty. And if you want to put tapestries and rugs and artwork in it, I've got the price for that under trade goods, and we can talk.
Exactly.
we can talk about all that stuff. You know.
Yeah, I like that stuff. My players just inherited a tavern, but now they have to keep it stocked, and they have to, I'm going to put in a little in between the game, emails that are going out. They're like, you guys need to manage your tavern, and if you don't, it'll have to close down. So,
I think one of the things is now that you've given the DM the ability to stretch the rules some. I mean, beforehand, the average player looking at this list and they're going to say, why would I ever need a chalk and slate? I'll never use that in combat, blah, blah, blah. Now, you've given the DM rules that enables him to stretch about what happens during an encounter and the things that might be included, and the player is now going to have to think, it's like, maybe some of these items could be important and they'll have a use. And, I think that it follows hand in hand. One builds on the other that way. I love seeing this stuff in here.
Well, and some of that, I think, goes back to the old complaint that 4th edition is built for all combat and there's no role-playing, right?
Exactly,
This is the response. Well, guess what? Some of these items are not meant for combat. But that doesn't mean they're not useful. That doesn't mean your character wouldn't carry them. And that doesn't mean they might not come up.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So be prepared. And on top of that, in that same chapter, you also have a whole new list of new alchemical items that I think it's worth mentioning as well. Some of which are just bringing back, again, going back and bringing us old magic items or alchemical items, depending on what it is, right? The Sovereign Glue, although it's greater Sovereign Glue because they're fixing the old version that they're now basically retconning without getting rid of. And then the Universal Solvent, which is the sort of does the reverse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I know many people have been interested in discussing what's in the appendix. It didn't quite get its own chapter, but they threw in a few appendices. Yeah, I said that right.
Yes.
That have some interesting things in them, like henchmen.
I had my appendices taken out when I was 14.
Yeah, I had mine taken out in sixth grade.
Yeah, I still have mine.
So that means that Randall has to talk about the appendices because Thaddeus and I don't have them.
Actually, very useful because I actually did a blog post about maybe a year and a half ago about who fills up your town, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good example of meeting that part way. I don't think it's gone all the way yet. I really would like to see NPC classes like 3.5 used to have. I'd loved those.
I think you could extrapolate the henchman rules to become something like that, though.
I think, and I agree with you there. But yeah, I mean, these are the hireling and henchman rules that are in here are fantastic. And even suggestions for having pets. And the different ways to do that. It actually harkens back to a couple of other rules that are available and doesn't give any real new rules for pets. But, it's the rest of the information that sort of fills in some gaps. And that's fantastic. The second appendix on magic item stories might be useful for a DM on the fly, if they need something in a hurry. The item level for treasure, that's kind of important, because especially if you're building your own things, it's kind of nice to see something behind the screens that says, well, what plus, if I have to put a plus on this, level should it be at?
Well, and that one adds some interesting guidelines that you can use to sort of scale up items, too.
Right,
So the idea is, well, my fighter's had this sword that's special to him. I can have the ancestral family sword or whatever, and it can just – I can use these rules to sort of – it just increases in power over time rather than giving him new magic items and making him suddenly get rid of the old family ancestral sword just because it's plus one and he found a new plus four thing,
Right, exactly.
You can sort of scale up that way.
Yep. And, of course, the last appendix is the list of stuff organized by common and rare, etc.
It's the last appendix is ironically more of an index.
Yeah, basically.
Now, guys, we're not skipping past hirelings and henchmen to get now that we're at the appendix, are we? We're gonna come back.
No, we talked about it.
You were busy tweeting or something.
I'll tell you what I was busy doing later. It's jeez. Insane and awesome.
I thought maybe you were responding because Chris Sims is talking to you on Twitter.
Oh, is he? I missed that. Okay. No, I'm watching Daffy Duck the Wizard. I had not seen this before. How come no one's told me about this? This is amazing.
Because we didn't want to interrupt your life with something that awesome.
All right. Well, back to the appendix then.
Well, tell us about
one complaint that people have had is that it doesn't have a have random tables in it. But, you know, I don't know. It seems to me that you pick, you know, why, I don't know. Is that necessary? I posed the question because I don't, you know, I don't know. There has been a complaint that there's no random tables.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily feel like I need random tables. But it would be an interesting project to take on. I've toyed since I think you guys talked about it once on the DMR.
Yeah.
And it, since I heard it, I'm like, you know what? I could totally make random tables that would work. It would take for freaking ever, but I could do that. You know, because
it's an undertaking to make random tables.
You need to have a different table for every rarity of every item at every level.
Yeah. You
know, and
that's a lot.
Random tables I see as being more in line with something for a dungeon or Dragon magazine, you know, something for the website. Something that can change or evolve as the game evolves. I think putting something like that in a printed book, which is maybe why they didn't put, you know, some kind of like charts and tables about how the rarity rules work, because it's about evolving. And I think Mordenkainen's was a book that had a theme, you know, like here is this tome that Mordenkainen's written and here's the information that goes along with it and then how to use it in your game. And I don't think random tables really would have fit into that. I guess you could have shoehorned them in, but I don't feel like it would have enhanced the book at all to include this.
No, I don't think so either.
Here's what I think they could have done, maybe. Then it wouldn't have just. I mean, you're already in the appendix, so at the point that you hit the appendix, they've abandoned the shell of Mordenkainen's book, right? So I think what they could have done is created a random treasure generation system that didn't get down to the specific item. You know, that you could randomly determine that, oh yeah, for this level they got an uncommon ring or whatever, you know, and then you as the DM can go into the uncommon rings and pick the one, or open up the compendium and see how many they are and roll whatever dice you need to roll to pick one at random, or you know, that kind of stuff. I think they could have done that and it would have worked because it would have been generic enough to pull that off. But
and I think also there's a synergy there with the DDI tools too. Eventually, this stuff will make its way to the compendium, and you know, you use your Heroes of the Forgotten Lands or whatever to figure out what level or of item that you need for a certain level, or what types of items are appropriate. Then you go to the list, and it's like, well, you know, I think for this treasure hoard, I want a I want a dagger. So you know, you can go in and look in the compendium. Let's look at all the uncommon daggers. Boom. And you can pick one that flavors your campaign and fits. And so the DM has, you know, the ultimate control. The random tables, you know, those harken all the way back to the first edition. And I don't know. They were okay, but it was filler. It really was. So.
Well, and I guess part of me, one of the things I spend the most amount of time on when I'm DMing is picking out treasure. It's a time-consuming task. Mm-hmm. And so if I wanted random tables, it would only be for the reason of I want to make my life as a DM easier and just come up with treasure faster. And it's not getting easier because with every book, there's more items to go through.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just lazy. And I am lazy. I mean, I know I am in multiple things in life. But, you know, as a DM, I get the wish list. I tell my players, write down what you want. And then most of the time I give it to them, and every once in a while I just throw them something that's weird and make them all kind of figure out what to do with it. But
don't use wish lists. So
I don't want every item I give them to be so random that you know, it feels like half the stuff I throw them no one can use, and so they've got to figure out how to get back to town or, you know, disenchant it and then make something or buy something that they can actually use. So
okay.
I want most treasure to be experience enhancing, and some of it to play that role of I don't know what to do with this.
So without getting into a whole advice episode on how to dole out treasure, let's finish off our discussion of Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium by saying who should buy this book. What kind of person should go out and purchase this book?
Randall, you go first.
I'm going to say DMs of all experience levels and players who want to see the old historical perspective in a 4E light.
Ooh, that's deep. See, that's better than what I have. But what I have is I've already pre-written that list somewhere else before. So here it is right here. So who should buy this book? DMs running Essentials-only campaign who want post-Essentials-style design philosophy items for their game. I did quotes in the air, by the way. You couldn't see, but there were some quotes in there. Players who just want more magic items, wondrous items, weapons, armor, that kind of stuff. DMs looking for official rules for hirelings and NPCs. And anyone looking for official cursed items stuff for their game is going to find stuff in this book that they're going to like. And who should not buy this product are DMs like DM Samuel, who doesn't like to use magical items. fluff haters.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to disagree because I think this is the exact kind of book that Sam would like. Because,
oh, I agree. Because
this book is all about making your magic items special. Instead of just flooding the market, you know, flooding the PCs with all kinds of magic items, this is about giving them something that has a story and matters. And I think that's
Sam's
actually,
got that. I think Sam's got that covered, though. He calls it drought. Drought makes everything look special. So,
what's ironic is that the book is called an emporium, yet it treats magic items as though you would never find them in an actual shop. So, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I don't know. All in all, I think that anybody who's looking for any of those things you guys mentioned, plus you also get more item rarity items in there.
You
know, some of the old stuff still hasn't been sort of converted over to know whether it's common or uncommon or to really be sure because they keep tweaking it or whatever. This has a plethora. Almost everything in here is uncommon or rare. So it's really sort of filling in that gap of, you know, we created these rarities and then never really put anything into them or didn't have much in there by comparison. And this starts to fill some of those gaps and does so in a way that really appeals to the nostalgia of, oh, yeah, this is why I liked D&D back in the day. I remember that time I had that Chime of Opening, or I remember the time I had that way back when I was playing in middle school or whatever. And it sort of appeals to some of that nostalgia. So,
yeah. Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to wrap things up. I want to thank our sponsor, Noble Knight Games. I also want to thank Thaddeus Cooper. Thaddeus,
Woo! Where
can people find you on the interwebs?
4geeks4e.com and This Is My Game, and also geekcred.com.
Does This Is My Game have a
yes, it's
a tag at the end? Is it a .com, a .net? What is it?
It's www.myrpgame.com.
.com. All right. Excellent. And tell us about Geek Cred. We'll see if we can help you out here.
Geek Cred originally started out as my bid for a social media position at Wizards of the Coast. And so it was a Facebook, blog, kind of Twitter, social media bombing strategy to try to get them to notice me, which actually worked. It got me an interview. So they haven't hired anybody yet, so I'm still waiting to hear back. But Geek Cred is slowly transitioning into my own personal everything that's not gaming blog. So I have my gaming blog, and then I have like the mixed bag blog. And so that's going to be what Geek Cred is.
Very good. And also with us is Randall Walker. Where can we find you?
Well, you can find me at my own personal blog, which is innitorwhat.com, .blogspot.com, excuse me. And you can also, I do a little writing for This Is My Game as well. I do a Star Frontiers article for them. And I am also one of the panelists for 4Geeks 4E. So you'll see me or hear me on that as well. And, of course, I'm always on the Twitters at DeadOrcs. So.
Right on. And Thaddeus is also on the Twitters. You want to?
Yes, I spend a little time there every once in a while.
You want to pimp yourself there?
Yeah, I'm at Thaddeus C, which if you can spell it, good for you.
Well, Thaddeus isn't that hard to spell.
Yeah, everybody gets it wrong, though. Okay. I have an unusual spelling, so.
I never gotten it wrong, Thad.
That's why I like you. That's why we're friends.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, good. Okay.
And I suppose that if we're all going to pimp Twitter, I am Squatch, Squach. You can also get a hold of me and Tracy by contacting us through email at thetomeshow@gmail.com, by calling in the Tome's biz line at 919-BIZ-TOME. That's 919-BIZ-TOME to ask us questions or share your thoughts or comments about whatever we're talking about. Or swing by the forums at gamershavenpodcast.com. You can find show notes at thetomeshow.com. Or, you know, hop on iTunes and review us. Let people know about it that way. Get out there and spread the word. Help the show grow. All those things I usually mention. Go to the Amazon store. All that stuff. And that, my friends, is episode 184, unless I've miscounted again, which I do sometimes. We've totally blinged out on some wicked awesome new gear. I don't do a very good Boston accent. The only thing missing in that emporium is a great t-shirt cursing the name of...
Oh, Jeff come on. Greiner.
There you go. Yeah. Anyway, we have now concluded our look at Mordenkainen's magnificent emporium in this episode of...
The Tome.
I'm on the wall.